I'm looking at the AP story here. Gay couples began registering for civil partnerships at town halls across Great Britain on Monday as a law took effect, giving them, well, many of the same legal rights as married heterosexuals. We're going to be talking about gay civil unions in Great Britain. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest for the next 25 minutes of Issues Etc. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Thursday. It's the 8th of December. And as our conversation draws to a close with Dr. Montgomery, we will also be bringing up a few subjects of the holiday season. Holiday season, we call it now, not the Christmas season. Christians very concerned about nativity scenes and whether or not we use the word Christmas. We'll get Dr. Montgomery's reflection on that a little bit later in this conversation. Open Lines follows our conversation with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. We'll be talking about the President's holiday card. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a regular guest. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana. He's author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christianity in the Public Square. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Were you surprised at all at the civil unions law passed in Great Britain?
Well, not particularly. This, of course, is a tendency everywhere to provide the approximation of marriage for people who, because they're of the same sex, for example, are not able to enter into marital unions. This is an example of a very small minority in Western countries putting so much pressure through the media onto their respective societies that all sorts of legal changes are made for a very, very small percentage of the population. You know, there's the adage that extreme cases make bad law, and this is certainly an example of it.
Now, the distinction is made. It's made here in the United States. It's made in the law, or at least in the press coverage of the law in Great Britain that is granting legal status to civil unions or same-sex unions. The distinction made between union and marriage, many would contend this is a distinction without a difference. Where do you come down on that issue?
Well, fortunately, they have not, as I believe in at least one American state and in Canada, been willing to use the term marriage for it. That's something. That's important semantically. What the English terminology is that of a civil partnership. All right, a civil partnership, making it possible for gay couples to have virtually all of the financial benefits of marriage. That, of course, is the sad part of it. Fascinatingly enough, the former High Court judge, Dame Elizabeth Butler Sloss, whom I know, and who is regarded really as a liberal, it was regarded that way when she was on the bench and she retired just this year, came out just this last week with a powerful condemnation of the new law in England. Let me quote her. I think you will find this very interesting. She says this outcome, which contributes to the downgrading of the status of marriage, is particularly sad, since the statistics show that marriage remains the most stable of all relationships between men and women, even with the instance of divorce. And she continues, the financial change of direction away from the support of marriage has created a wasted opportunity to support a section of the public whose value to society has been seriously undervalued, unquote. Her point there is that now there is really no incentive to marry, because one can get the same financial advantages otherwise.
So would you foresee there being people in Great Britain, now that they have civil unions, saying, look, marriage, we'll register at the town hall, we'll be a civil partnership, and that'll be enough for us? Do you see this as perhaps one step on the way toward at least the dissolution of the concept of marriage legally?
Oh, I think it certainly contributes in that direction. And The irony of this, of course, also is that it creates all sorts of legal anomalies. There was another article in the London Times by a journalist who said, why is it that two gays can get these financial advantages simply by going to a registry office and living together on a consistent basis? He said, my daughter lives with me in our house, and she shares the financial burdens with me. He apparently is a widower or divorced, and he says, but I can't establish this kind of partnership with my daughter and benefit from it. And as one thinks this through, there are any number of so-called committed relationships in life, but we wouldn't want to provide identical tax advantages for all of them. The point of providing these advantages in the case of marriage, just as Butler Schloss says, is that that is the most stable relationship in society because it is a relationship in which children grow up and it therefore provides a substratum for everything else.
As far as you know, Dr. Montgomery, is there any provision in this law for the dissolving of these unions, something akin to divorce in the case of marriage?
No, not really. And Butler Schloss also pointed out that as a result of this, there are, as she says, legal pitfalls if they separate acrimoniously or die without making proper provision for the other partner. And the government has not thought that through. This gives me a chance, by the way, to rant and rave about one problem in the British political system. In Britain, there is what is known as parliamentary sovereignty. That means that Parliament is the absolute source of law. There isn't anything like a written constitution or a Supreme Court. The point of a written constitution is to limit the legislature so that if they get all excited about something, they can't vote in some lame-brained concept which goes against the fundamental beliefs of the society. With a written constitution and a Supreme Court, if the legislature goes wild, goes crazy, the Supreme Court can knock down the legislation on the basis of its conflicting with the more fundamental constitution. In England, there's something a bit like this now that the European Convention on Human Rights, the European Bill of Rights, has been incorporated into English law. So the English can't, go against fundamental human rights. But there is still this sad situation in England where if you get a truly lame-brained parliament, you can get truly lame-brained laws. The reason that this exists in England is that England was once a powerful Christian country. And the idea was that the legislators would reflect historic Christianity. Therefore, they didn't need this kind of check on them. But of course, that that was an idea which didn't take original sin seriously. And now that Great Britain, like most of the Western world, has become a very secular country, you're going to get legislators who probably ought to be locked up and who certainly need the check of a written constitution.
We're talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about gay civil unions in Great Britain. He joins us for about the next 10 minutes of the program, and then we'll have some open lines. We'll play a CBS piece on the President's holiday card and get your thoughts on that as well. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Some quick questions, Dr. Montgomery. The Church of England, of course, also has something of a legal status there in Great Britain. And does this in any way obligate the Church of England in any direction?
It doesn't, actually, because these are civil partnerships, and they take place without any reference to the Church. The Church, if it were, the Church of England, if it were more consistent doctrinally, and if it maintained its historic theology in a consistent fashion throughout the country, it would certainly have risen up in wrath over this whole thing, But, you know, the English have a hard time doing this. They really do. There is the cartoon that was in Punch in the 19th century, The Curate's Egg, it's called. And there is the curate, and he's been invited by the Lord of the Manor on Sunday. And the Lord of the Manor's wife says, there appears to be something the matter with the egg you're eating. And the curate says, "Oh no! It's only partly bad." Point being that you know, if an egg is partly bad, the whole thing is bad. But the curate is frightened to death to criticize anybody. And Herbert Butterfield, the author of Christianity and History, that fine Christian interpretation of history a generation ago, Herbert Butterfield said the trouble with us English is that we think that you can sit down with anybody at 4 o'clock tea and they will be reasonable. What we lack is a serious view of original sin. Mm. And, of course, that's exactly what happened with Chamberlain at Munich. The English should stand up for the theology of the Reformation and criticize the kind of nonsense that this partnership law represents.
Do you anticipate any ramifications in the European Union, that ongoing relationship with other countries there in Western Europe, or are these other countries way out ahead of Great Britain?
Well, some of them are. The Netherlands, for example, Belgium. And the difficulty is that as each of these laws comes about, it adds fuel to the flames of the gay lobby, for example, to push for the same thing in other countries. Now, I firmly believe that a gay person should not have his or her civil rights abridged, but marriage is not a civil right, nor is a partnership relationship. These are artificial relationships, legally, that are created for the public good. And it is not for the public good that any relationship other than marriage should benefit to the same extent that marriage does.
How big a force is the gay rights movement in England?
Oh, it's trivial. It's trivial, just like it is in the United States. It's probably 2% of the entire populace. Now, if we were boiling these people in oil or doing something of that kind, then it would be dreadful even for 2%. But it is utterly unrealistic to think that a very, very small and bizarre minority in a society should be able to create major legal changes for that society. And I hold the media responsible for most of this because there's nothing that media people like to do more than to create fusses and alter the way things operate. And this is very unfortunate. You know, they say that good news is never news.
Dr. Montgomery, one final question before we move on to talking to you about the Christmas symbols in public property. How should Christians make a case against homosexuality in the public square? Should we warn them with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah and other such biblical accounts?
We ought to try to establish a common ground with the intelligent thinking unbelievers in these areas and not turn the thing into a biblical crusade. There are a sufficient number of powerful arguments concerning the weakness of homosexuality and the effect that it has on a society, on the people involved in it, on children, and so forth, that we should be able to use those arguments to convince the society in general, regardless of their religious beliefs, that this is a bad thing. It's a bad idea. If we instead turn the thing into a religious crusade, then the difficulty is, of course, that in the United States, where we present religious arguments for this sort of thing, we're not going to be able to employ those arguments effectively in the political realm because of the separation of church and state.
What is the best of those secular arguments you think that can be made against homosexuality in the public square?
The strongest argument has to do with the instability of these relationships. As Butler Schloss says, even with high-profile divorce cases in the modern Western world, the fact of the matter is that the marriage relationship between husband and wife turns out to be the most stable basis for the family and for the bringing up of children. And, of course, the bringing up of children conditions the next generation. So homosexual relationships are always the second best. And beyond that, it's not difficult to show psychologically, for example, the aberrational character of homosexuality. Generally, this comes about as a result of a strong mother and a weak father. This isn't the only source of it, but it is an aberrational kind of phenomenon. And if people try to argue that this is genetic, let's say, even if it were genetic, let's say it was genetic, that wouldn't mean that the practice was necessarily good. American Indians genetically have a predilection toward alcoholism, but that doesn't mean that they should be able to get blind drunk or have the right to drive automobiles when they're in that condition at all. Drunkenness is still a ghastly thing, even if it does have genetic foundations.
Turning in the last few minutes to to the subject of Christian symbolism in the public square, do Christmas nativity scenes belong on the courthouse lawn, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, they don't in the United States because of the clear separation of church and state mandated by the founding documents of our country. So there we are. And if Christians get all excited about this, my advice to them is to spend their time putting up magnificent creche sets on the church lawns and on their own personal property so that those creche sets are visible to everybody. We should not have to have the state do our evangelism for us. Now, it would be nice if it were possible to have the creche sets identified with public functions, but this is simply not possible constitutionally in the United States. And there's no point in Christians battering their heads against a wall on this. It should give them an incentive to do more effective preaching of the gospel through the church and through the home. In England, where there isn't a separation of church and state, we have creche sets in all public locations, and this is fine. But as a result of a state church, people tend to regard the church like you regard the post office as a necessary public function, but not something that draws you emotionally toward commitment. In the United States, because the church is independent, it can present the gospel and strive for commitment. You know, Billy Graham's Hour of Decision.
Some conservatives would contend, many do, that the concept you discussed just a moment ago, the separation of church and state, is a myth, something not inherent in the American ideal, and something that is imposed by those who want to expunge religion, all religion, from the public square.
Well, to those people, I have one single question. Show me where Jesus Christ and the gospel are included in any of the founding documents of the country or in the principles which are set forth legally and constitutionally for the United States. The fact of the matter is Jesus Christ is totally absent from that material, and the reason for this is that these documents were prepared primarily by people who were known as deists. They believed in God, but he was the vague creator of everything and the creator of morality, but he certainly had no redemptive function whatsoever. And they wanted to make sure that in the case of the United States, that it would be a level playing field in which people of any or no religious belief would be able to express themselves. The irony for those secularists of that era, we might call them that, the irony for them is that they actually created a situation where it's been possible to preach the gospel with far greater effectiveness than in countries where there is an official religion.
Dr. Montgomery, we often review sermons of popular TV preachers here on Issues, Etc. And in the review, it is noted again and again and again that Jesus Christ is not even mentioned in so many of these sermons. The name doesn't even pass the preacher's lips. Yet there is little to no outrage from these Christless sermons. Many American Christians, not outraged by the Christless preaching they get every Sunday, are at the same time somehow aghast when Christ isn't displayed in the manger at the city hall.
Yes, there's high irony there, isn't there? Because it is the function of the preacher to present the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. If he's not doing that, he's not doing his job at all. It is not the function of the government to present the gospel of Jesus Christ. So people who get excited about this kind of thing ought to be after the preachers who are not doing their job, instead of ignoring that and concentrating on judges who judges or legislators, for goodness sake. But you know, that just goes to show what Luther's point, that sin blinds people, and the devil just loves to take us away from what is central and have us concentrate on what is trivial. Because as long as we do that, the end results are going to be right in the devil's territory.
Dr. Montgomery, before we let you go, how many slots are left open now for the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights?
There are only 5 places available for this coming summer, and we would really encourage listeners to this program to get in touch with the program as quickly as possible if they would like to do this. Technically, our registration deadline isn't until February, but as usual, because of the wonderful character of this program and the interest that it's created to a greater and greater extent every year, we have to close the deadline, the door earlier, simply because we are limited to 20 students. So it's the kind of thing that one ought to decide upon, and this is a good time to decide, right? It's getting toward Christmas, and this is the time to go to your wealthy uncle, or even a non-wealthy uncle, and suggest that he pay this, because it's less than $3,000. My goodness, an organized tour, you know, to Hawaii, where you do nothing but lie on the beach and don't learn anything, costs more than that, costs as much as that.
Dr. Montgomery is the European Director and Professor in Residence of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. Their academy coming up this summer. You can find out all about it at our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. You'll find it there. Click on, under What's New, click on the link to the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and it will tell you all about it. Or you can call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, and we will send you a free brochure for the 10th Annual International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, thank you very much for being our guest.
Oh, you're most welcome. Don't forget to mention that you yourself are going to be teaching on that program this summer.
I will be there. Humility stays my hand. That's what it is. It's going to be an honor to be there, Dr. Montgomery.
All right. I mentioned it. You didn't.
All right. When we come back from this break, a little bit of open lines. We'll hear from CBS on the President's holiday card.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The story of Jesus' incarnation, the story of Jesus' birth, the story of Christmas is a story for Christians of all ages. Our Savior took the path of the Virgin's womb to the cross for us sinners. It all begins in Bethlehem. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for December is called The Shepherd's Christmas Story, and it tells the story of Christ's birth in Bethlehem. This book is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, you can visit our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find The Shepherd's Christmas Story right there on the homepage. Or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues, Etc. book of the month for December, The Shepherd's Christmas Story.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Terry Phillips, sitting in for Bob Dittmer. A print ad appearing in Colorado newspapers is taking Senator Ken Salazar to task for comments he made about Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito. The political arms of Focus on the Family and the Family Research Council are sponsoring the ad and are hoping Salazar constituents take note of the unsupportable comment, "America deserves better." Steve Jordahl reports.
The ad has a picture of Senator Salazar underneath his quote, "America deserves better than what we got here." It's followed by highlights of Judge Alito's record.
Focus on the Family Action. This is Amanda. Certainly. Did you have some comments to make? I could take those down for you.
Focus Action's phones were busy the day the ad appeared in three large Colorado dailies. Among the comments, "Thank you for the good work," "You're an evil organization," and "You should be shot." Senator Salazar's office was busy as well. They didn't return our calls. Peter Brandt of Focus Action.
We're not name-calling here. We're just quoting something that Salazar has said and pointing that out. We go out of our way in the ad to say that this is not what we're saying about Salazar.
As the Rocky Mountain News reported, quote, "The deserves better comment about Alito is far more polite than the language Salazar has used in the past to describe Focus on the Family."
So what we would like to see is people, citizens in the state of Colorado, contact Salazar and plead their case.
Connie Mackey of Family Research Council Action says more ads could be on their way.
There are several senators that need to be challenged on the fact that you can be pro-life and hold high office.
She specifically mentioned Senator Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
The ad points out that Alito's record includes the American Bar Association's highest rating. For Family News in Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
AM 850 KFUO wants you to have a very Merry Christmas. So we're giving you a chance to win a Build-A-Bear Workshop Christmas teddy bear. All you have to do is
listen for the jingle bells.
That's your cue to call and register. One registration per family, please. Then we'll draw and award one Build-A-Bear Workshop bear on the first three Fridays in December. See the cute, cuddly bears on our homepage at KFUO.org. And
listen for the jingle bells
on AM 850 KFUO.
Popular author Dandy Daly McCall has written our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, titled The Shepherd's Christmas Story. It's a Christmas book for young children. The Shepherd's Christmas Story is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The cost is $12.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or find out more about The Shepherd's Christmas Story on our website, issuesetc.org. The Shepherd's Christmas Story.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilk. A little bit of open lines ahead here. We got something to play for you from CBS News. The President's holiday card. It's not a Christmas card, technically speaking, because it doesn't mention Christmas, although it's a snowy scene of the White House on the front and inside. Best wishes during this holiday season. But there's no mention of Christmas. The Bible passage that is quoted on the inside of the President's holiday card is, well, it's a Bible passage, but it's rather nondescript. Nothing specifically Christmas-y about it. There's a lot of talk among American evangelicals about stealing Christmas, about how the secular culture and the forces that be in the secular culture are taking Christmas away from us in the public square. And, nary a peep about the president, and this isn't the first time he's done it, nary a peep about the president sending out his holiday card. We'll play this piece for you, and then I want to hear from you. It's open lines, and we will be, after our CBS piece is played, we will also be asking this question: what's in your holiday card? We do this every year. It's been years and years we've been doing this here on Issues Etc. What is your holiday card like? You probably sent them out by now if you wanted to hit the mail rush, so it's probably fresh in your mind. What does it say? What's the picture? You send out one like the Bushes? Holiday greetings. Here's the front of our house, our two dogs and a cat. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And here's the CBS piece on the president's holiday card.
Even if you're on the official White House mailing list, do not expect a Christmas card this year. The President and First Lady are sending season's greetings, but with a twist. Senior White House correspondent Bill Plant has the story. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Julie. Well, the holidays are coming, but which holidays? Well, of course, there's Christmas, but there's also Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and New Year's. And it's the question of which holiday we celebrate which so often divides. Take the case, for example, of the White House Christmas card.
The White House has no problem calling this the National Christmas Tree. But if you're looking for the word Christmas on the official holiday card, you're not going to find it. The closest you'll get, best wishes for a holiday season, so that no one in this very diverse nation is excluded.
It's a Christmas card. What's wrong with the President of the United States, who is a practicing Christian, for saying Merry Christmas in his Christmas card?
Some conservative Christians are pushing retailers and schools to call the holiday Christmas, and they're very upset.
The President of the United States, we thought, is one of us. This is a small step, but it's a step in the wrong direction. He's sending the wrong message at Christmas time.
Every holiday season, people across the nation battle over religious symbols and displays. In Boston this year, the tree on the Commons was officially renamed. It's now a holiday tree.
That's kind of sad.
How come?
I don't know. I keep the spirit of Christmas alive. Why get rid of Christmas?
Why? Well, someone else had this answer.
I think you have to be sensitive on that issue around the time of the holidays. You know, there are other religions that have holidays around this time, too.
Near Jacksonville, Florida, one man has taken his case for a live nativity scene next to the city's Christmas tree and menorah all the way to federal court.
Government may not prefer one sectarian view over another. And what the cities have both done in this case is have preferred the Jewish menorah over the religious nativity scene or the Christian nativity scene.
These days, official Washington bends over backward to be inclusive. In simpler times, presidents wished their friends and supporters a very Merry Christmas. But the first President Bush was the last to mention Christmas on his holiday cards. That's okay, says Letitia Baldridge.
You can be a Catholic, a Jew, a Mormon, a Muslim, but it's a time to celebrate. It's a happy season, and that's what the card says.
The social secretary in the Kennedy White House thinks the fight over taking Christmas out of the president's card is much ado about nothing.
To turn it into a sectarian war is just pitiful. It shows how really insecure we all are as a nation.
Well, the Speaker of the House agrees he's calling the Capitol tree the Christmas tree this year. And the president, while he may not put Christmas on this card, does include a verse from the Old Testament. Now, that's pretty safe, kind of having it both ways. Happy holidays, Julie.
Happy holidays, whatever you celebrate, Bill. I just hope we're all happy. Bill Plant, outside the White House. Thanks, Bill.
Well, are you happy with the president's holiday card? I didn't get one of these, but I know people who did. Let's hear from you on President Bush's holiday card this year. Has he bought into, given into, compromised with, been compromised by the secularizing forces in our culture? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines for your phone calls for the next 20 minutes. You can also answer this question. What's in your holiday card? If you've sent them out already, it's fresh in your mind. What's the picture? What's the message? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I've actually had listeners come up to me various times throughout the year and say, I want to tell you what my Christmas card said. I didn't get a chance to call in when you did this last Christmas, and we've been doing it for a lot of Christmases in a row. Here's what it said. I've even had people send me their Christmas cards and give me their Christmas cards. Some have been inspired by our What's in Your Christmas Card Issues, Etc. feature we do every year to rethink what they're sending out during the Christmas season. It's Open Lines Issues, Etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, the President's Christmas card, if you haven't seen it yet, it's making the rounds, has a scene on the front, really beautiful painting of the White House, kind of featuring one of the famous and historic trees outside the White House. And beneath the White House, if you look carefully at this snow-covered scene with the American flag flying up from the top of the building, are the two little, I think they're Yorkies that the presidents have running around. One of them's named Mrs. Beasley. And then their cat there as well. India, I think is her name, little dark cat running around. And then on the inside of the card, a quotation from one of the Psalms, brief, nondescript, and an equally brief and nondescript holiday greeting from the President and the First Lady. What do you think about this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And if you've got a Christmas card you've sent out, what's in your Christmas card? What does it say? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first, from Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, Jeff is calling. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good. If I may paraphrase Bart Simpson, Christmas is the one time of year where people of all faiths and nationalities worship Jesus Christ as Lord, which I guess the point of what the the Simpsons were trying to say is basically Christmas has really become a non-Christian holiday in many respects. And I would say most secular Jewish people I know celebrate Christmas. And for me, like, all the hubbub about saying Merry Christmas would make more sense if people actually treated Christmas like a Christian holiday.
So in other words, you believe, at least in practical terms, the celebration of Christmas for most people is more or less meaningless, or at least bereft of any significant religious meaning.
Well, you know, there's a good and bad to that. The good point is that because everybody likes the holiday, you can use it as a bridge-building opportunity to share your faith. The bad of it is that, yes, it does diminish what the holiday is meant to be.
Jeff, thank you very much for listening out there in Valley Forge and listening on the Internet. It's always a pleasure to hear from our listeners outside our immediate broadcast area. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Lael from Webster Groves. Hi, Lael.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
Very well.
You had a cold this morning, it sounded like, on the Bible study.
I have a cold like nobody's business. If you will permit me a brief personal note, I was perfectly healthy 2 days ago.
I believe it.
And now I'm practically dead. So it came on strong.
It sure did.
Yeah. I'm surviving on big, gigantic cups of the red and the yellow stuff. So.
Oh, red and yellow stuff.
Yeah, I'm talking about NyQuil and DayQuil, by the way.
Okay. My comment was last year, I sent out a letter, and it's all about Christ. And I usually, like last year, I started out saying, you know, Christmas is every day to me, and I explained why. You know, so I'm really very detailed about it, and then I'll just print it off and walk down the neighborhood and stick it in their mailboxes. So just from your neighbor, you know, and I send it through email, too, sometimes.
What do you make of the president sending out a distinctly holiday card this year, as he has in the past, without any reference to Christmas?
Well, I think it's too bad because now, you know, his rating's down, you know, and I hope he's not kind of like trying to walk the fence now. But I think it's sad that he can't do it. He's a Christian, so why shouldn't he, you know?
Does your Christmas message that you just talked about, does it include the not only the what of Christmas, but also the why of Christmas, why this baby came?
Yeah, it does. It does. In fact, I did a eulogy for my nephew's funeral. I'm probably going to develop that into a Christmas message. And it's kind of odd, but it's the reason why we die, and it's the reason why we have Christ, because sin permeates our lives. So I don't know. I wanted to make sure that it's clear why we have Christ.
Lael, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's DB. He calls from his car. DB, yeah, welcome.
Oh, thank you. The only thing I was going to say is I think this ties in nicely with your last segment with the president's card. I think that as conservative Christians, so-called evangelicals, that we often focus, we're focusing on the wrong thing. We're focusing on what message the government or the president sends out about Christmas. And we're not focused on what the church does with Christmas or we as individual Christians and our families do with Christmas. Not that I'm not concerned about Christmas losing its emphasis on Christ, but if we don't have that emphasis in the church and we don't have that emphasis in our own teaching and training of our children, I think that we're focusing on the wrong thing. And if church can be, if church celebrates Christmas with Christ, then we can show that message more clearly to the culture, I think.
I think it's the church's responsibility, DB. Thank you very much. You're right. It's the irony that Dr. Montgomery pointed out. That is, Christians don't bat an eye when Christ is absent from the preaching they hear on Sunday morning. Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, they just get moralism and they say, wow, that was great. But then come the holiday season and they don't see the baby Jesus out on the public square and they notice he's missing. Blind spot. That's the word they have for that. Steve calls from his car. Hi, Steve. Steve, welcome.
Hey, you're missing a wonderful commute with this weather. But hey, you know what? Here's my question. The president's card, is it George W. Bush or is it from the president of the United States?
Well, it has his signature and his wife's signature at the, you know, printed inside.
Maybe, right.
And then on the back it says paid for by the National Republican Committee and not intended to endorse any candidate.
Okay. Well, my thing is though is I don't really care what the president's card says. Because it's a national office. It's not like we elected him to become high priest or lead preacher of the United States. It's a political office. Now, I have a other question for you. And this is something that I find quite amusing. The fact that a lot of these mega churches aren't going to have service on Christmas Day Sunday because of lack of attendance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a question for you. Which do you find more disturbing? The lack of a Christmas card without Christ or a lack of a church service on Sunday with these mega churches?
Well, that's a couple of questions all rolled into one, Steve. Thank you very much. Well, I don't know if I've gotten more email about this one thing in the last 3 days than we've gotten about anything in a long time. People just saying, open lines, all of them are tagged this way, open lines topic. Mega church is closing on Christmas Day. It's not just Christmas Day. It's since Christmas falls on a Sunday, they're not having church on Sunday. And we've all seen the stories in the newspaper. Willow Creek kind of leads the way, and the other ones, they got together and they said, no church on Christmas. The spokesman for Willow Creek said, it's because the last time Christmas fell on a Sunday, back in the mid-90s, practically nobody showed up at Willow Creek. And they thought, why bring out all the hundreds of volunteers we need on a Sunday morning when no one's going to show up? They're all going to stay home because it's Christmas morning. And so they don't have church. I'm torn on this one, tell you the truth. I mean, I really am. Part of me says, how can a church not have church on Sunday, regardless of what is being celebrated that Sunday? And in another direction, but I think I'm going to save that for Monday. We're going to make this an open lines topic on Monday on the program. We'll give a whole hour to it. Mega church is closing on Christmas Sunday. I'll give you the other side of my thought on this probably sometime Monday during open lines. Yeah, but it does point out something. The same Christians who will be staying home from church on Sunday at these mega churches by design will probably be sitting around the fire and the wassail and whatever they have there, saying, man, did you see the president's card? He didn't say Christmas. Or, did you see the town square? There was no baby Jesus out there. Ann calls from Crestwood. Ann, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Todd. I just finished my cards a few minutes ago, and I got a pro-life card. It's the only religious one kind of I could find, and it's got the Madonna and child with three angels. It's an old painting from the 1900s or 1800s. But I always write a message inside, and you'll be familiar with this quote I wrote. Upon the death of Martin Luther, a note was found in his pocket. Mm. Scrawled upon it were these words, Wir sind alle Butler, if that's how you say it.
Butler, yeah.
Okay, and then I put, we are all beggars, and I said, and so Jesus came.
Oh, that's great.
Well, it's my favorite quote of the year, I think. That's just very profound what he had there, and I learned that from you, and I thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Anne. You know, that's not going to be a seeker-sensitive Christmas card. That might offend a few. That might offend a lot of Christians to find Luther's dying words, we are all beggars, this is true. Mm. So what do you think about the president's Christmas card, and what does yours say? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hey, the last time this happened, didn't it happen? That maybe it was last year. I cannot believe it would be last year. We sent out a Christmas card, remember? And we had callers about it. Do you remember this? We sent out a Christmas card. from this station. It didn't have my signature on it. Was it 2 years ago? No. Where have I been? 2 years ago, we sent out a Christmas card from this station. My name did not appear on it, but it was something like season's greetings from us. And there was no reference to Christmas, no nothing on it. We got calls on it. We got calls on it. They still haven't asked me about the Christmas card this year. It's open lines, issues, etc. We're playing a little bit of our annual holiday Christmas feature. What does your Christmas card say? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The Bush's Christmas card, holiday card, has a quotation from a psalm and a generic holiday greeting with their signatures. What does yours say? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll start the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. Dr. Stephen Mueller will be our guest. We're going to talk about the theology of C.S. Lewis. Now, this comes in advance of this film that's coming out. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe will prove, I think, to be at least a very entertaining film. But the theology of Lewis is a mixed bag. There's a lot of good in there, and those who are fans of Lewis know that good. There is some that is questionable, and there are some that is just wrong. We'll be talking about some of those points in the last half hour of Issues, etc. Until then, it's open lines, 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. You know, I don't expect when I drive through my little town and I go downtown by the city hall to see anything out on the lawn. I wouldn't even be able to tell you what's out on the lawn. I don't check. I don't worry about it. I don't expect the officials of our county or our little city to worry about it either. I would prefer that they keep the roads plowed at this time of the year rather than put all sorts of religious symbols out there. You know, the churches, I would expect to see something there. And individual Christmas Christians' homes where they feel the need to display the creche or the nativity scene, I'd expect to see it there. Arthur calls from Jennings. Arthur, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Good evening. I imagine that you've heard that some of the big retailers like Walmart and Sears and Target have instructed their employees not to say Merry Christmas.
I've heard that, yes.
And you're getting greeting cards like the president sends out, doesn't say Merry Christmas. I'm appalled at what's going on in this nation and how far the unbelievers and the pagans have gone. And has there been any concerted effort upon by the Christian churches to counteract this, to put in their 2 cents worth and not lose another battle by default? How about the local pastor either mention it in the service or putting it in the church bulletin that the Christians ought to speak out in defense of Merry Christmas and everything else about Christmas, because it's under attack. I guess you're aware of that.
Well, Arthur, I would hope that you would be equally appalled when famous preachers who ought to know better, like Robert Schuller or Joel Osteen or Bill Hybels or Rick Warren, don't preach Christ on a regular Sunday. Are you equally appalled?
Yes, I think Robert Schuller is awful shallow. I have for a long time.
Thank you very much, Arthur. What do you expect from the world? What do you expect from the world? I just want you to think in these terms for a moment. The world is depicted in the New Testament, first by our Lord, as a hostile place to Christians, to his disciples. For in this world and from this world, you will have trouble. So what do we expect the world to do? Do we expect the world to reflect our faith and our beliefs? Do we expect the world to reinforce what we believe? I don't see any indication in Scripture that we should reasonably expect this from the culture or from the world. Paul nowhere faults the Roman society he lives in for not supporting, through its traditions, its symbols, its observations, what he preaches. He doesn't seem to expect the world to reinforce it in any way, or to reflect it, or to even acknowledge it. he does expect, in no uncertain terms, for Christians to do so. He does expect of himself, first and foremost, that he be a preacher of Christ. In fact, he says at one point, "Woe unto me if I do not preach the cross, the gospel." Christians today have a higher expectation of the culture than they do of their own church. They are outraged at the secularization of the culture. But I ask again, what do you expect from the culture? The outrage ought to be with the secularization of the church. That's something I think St. Paul, our Savior Jesus Christ, would also have been outraged by, are also outraged by. Linda calls from her car. Linda, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, I'm outraged by the secularization of the church as well, and I think it's really, it is a serious problem in some churches and denominations. But regarding the Merry Christmas and whether the stores say that or not, I'm a Walgreens shareholder, and I heard Walgreens also was not saying Merry Christmas. I happened to call them in Chicago to ask, what's the deal? What's up with this? And they said they had gotten so many calls about this that next year they're going to be able to say Merry Christmas because they've changed their policy midstream. And the other thing about Walgreens that I was concerned about is the RU486 debacle where the four pharmacists were let go or put on leave because they wouldn't just, you know, give the 486. And they said that those four pharmacists are going to become Missouri. I don't know if they're going to become a Missouri residents, but they are going to get jobs in Missouri.
Linda, thank you very much for the call. We talked with one of those four pharmacists last week today, 1 week ago today. And their disposition, their futures are still a little shaky. But I think that's probably something of more concern about Walgreens than whether or not they are encouraging their employees to say Merry Christmas. You know, you can walk around saying Merry Christmas, and our first caller, Steve, I believe, who called in, said, look, let's just face it. In the world's ears, that doesn't sound like anything. In the world's ears, that sounds like Santa Claus, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and evergreens. Red balls and tinsel and lights. That's what it sounds like. And whose fault is that? Is it the culture's fault? No. You know, if the church perhaps were a little clearer on the Christ, maybe the culture, in its own feeble way, might be a little clearer on what Christmas is. When we come back, we'll talk about the theology of C.S. Lewis.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.